Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously, here in the Rugby Dungeon for a second episode of the weekend. This one, you will be delighted to learn, is just about all the great rugby that's going on the field, because there is plenty of that. I'm Tim in the Rugby Dungeon with JB.
Hello, Tim.
I'm with Phil from his middle-class haven in Centre Parks.
Hello, Tim. Hello, JB.
So have you actually managed to catch any rugby, Phil, whilst you're playing badminton and cycling with a big smile on your big grin on your face, idyllic family picture?
Well, most of my time is spent trying to stop my two children from killing each other, so there's been no badminton and no cycling, but I have watched some rugby. Let me start off from Friday night. I was on the road. I was driving up here from 7 to about 9 on Friday night. So I managed to catch the first half on Five Live Sports Extra of the Leicester Ospreys game, which included I listened to about half an hour of pre-match, which included one of the commentators describing Harry Simmons' try against Clermont, where he did Ali Verretu Raka inside and out, as literally did him in a phone box.
Wow.
Excellent.
Which either it shouldn't have been given because they were off the pitch, or there is some serious, serious questions to be answered from a health and safety perspective of what was going on there. So I listened.
It was quite funny. The BT Sport commentary of the Claremont game last week, I forgot to mention it last week, but Austin Healy actually said kind of the same thing, except he said post box instead of phone box.
Did he mean the post box?
he's done two guys in a post box there, which sounds like a, sounds like a niche subcategory,
isn't it? Just
on an adult site.
So I managed to watch. I then caught. I managed to time Hannah's nap incredibly, and I had Hannah asleep on me for 2 hours on my chest while I watched Harlequins versus Sharks yesterday afternoon, which was fantastic. And then, of course, I saw the Beardmore Largham Bowl yesterday evening. And then I've watched highlights of just about everything else. Yeah. Plus, I saw the end of Saracens Edinburgh. So I've seen enough.
I think we should start on Friday night. And then I'll tell you what, we'll start on Friday night, and then we'll jump to what the rugby game that JB did see lots of.
By the way, I've been completely out of the fold with rugby. I've watched one and a half games, maybe.
Is that because of the backdrop of everything going on?
Honestly, I just can't be motivated to watch it. Just can't see the point. But yeah, basically. So I've watched one and a half games, and I'll pitch in as when I have a
thought. Did you watch Leicester Ospreys?
No.
Oh, mate, well, that would have rekindled. I tell you what, that was exactly the tonic. That Friday night was what I needed. I was at Welford Road on a European night, and that in itself is a special place to be. But that, after a...
But knowing that's about to be taken away from you, that'd be difficult.
Well, you couldn't help but watch all the games this weekend and just in your mind go, penalty, penalty, pen, that's a pen, that's a pen. That's a pen. Ooh, that's another pen. But it's exactly what I needed. After a day of obsessing and thinking and being frustrated about all of the things around the game, to have that match was just the tonic. And it was an absolutely awesome,
tell you what,
92 minutes.
Ospreys taking down Tigers at Welford Road is bloody amazing.
After 10 minutes of injury time with the last play of the game.
Yeah, I mean, they are... I don't know what's going on there, why this European campaign has been so great for them, but it's one of the... I think it's one of the biggest European stories, maybe of the last 10 years, because they are so unfancied. They've got such a small team.
It does depend what they do next. No, they don't have a small... They're stacked with internationals. They've got Welsh internationals all over the place.
When they should... I mean,
it's not the Galacticos of the past when they had all those big stars and
they are very
Phil's favourite Tommy Bowe, but
they are a very, very thin squad.
It might be thin, but they've got an extremely good squad with internationals everywhere.
Yeah, I wonder if this will mean that they effectively just don't really concentrate too much on top Rainbow Cup, just called URC. Because, well, this is a great opportunity for them to progress. I mean, I don't think they're going to go that much further, but when their first team is out, they can certainly do some damage.
So what do they've got? They go to Saracens, don't they?
They could do Saracens.
Yeah?
They could do Saracens. Absolutely. From what I saw today, they could do Saracens.
Mm.
It was awesome. And there's a thing at the minute. So I was at two games this weekend, and the two man of the matches were number eights, who I stood and looked at eye level with Gregory Aldrete, and I looked down slightly on Jack Morgan.
Jack Morgan's not a huge man.
He's not a huge... No, the way he plays, you think he must be massive. He's not massive. It's actually like when I stood next to him going, how do you play the way you play?
Well, he's not... He's a bit squatter, isn't he, than, say, Sam Simmons. A bit more... I guess he's like an even smaller Visa.
He plays very similarly to Jasper Visa. More diminutive. I mean, he's not small, but he's... He's smaller than Sam Simmons. He's like one of the smallest number eights I've seen in some time, and he plays big heart, and the boy can play.
Excellent.
It was ace. Good story with Owen Williams as well, who's come in.
Yeah.
He's come in. He wasn't very good at Worcester. He was actually good when he was at
Leicester. No, he was good at Worcester.
No, he wasn't.
He was good at Worcester. He was just too injured.
He was good when he was at Leicester. He went to Gloucester and was injured all the time. It didn't work out. Went to Worcester and he didn't...
Injured? No, when he was playing, he was all right.
Nah, I'm not having that. Finn Smith was starting, wasn't he?
No, he was. He was kicking goals. He was doing all right. Nah. So do you remember they had like a game against...
Anyway, he's great now.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, he's a good player. He's a good player. He just had a hard road back from injury. Did he do his Achilles?
Yeah, it was a bad injury.
Yeah, like it was a really, really poor one. Do you know, there's a really good game against Gloucester when it was him versus Hastings, basically, just smashing over points from every which way. I think Worcester might have even won that.
It was great to see. Leicester will be disappointed. I think they thought they turned a corner when they were in Claremont last Friday night and got the win. After two record defeats in the Premiership, that'll sting, that one. Because at home in their own patch, feeling like they turned a corner, and I don't know if you saw the final moment. I'm quite happy the try was given, and it's a good story and a good moment. But I could understand if Leicester were slightly aggrieved, because it didn't appear to be a clear and conclusive grounding that you could see, and the referee did not do a on-field decision before he went up to the TMO.
Yeah, I was going to ask. So I've only seen the highlights of this, which was inconclusive as to what the referee said, but the referee did not give it, and then it was inconclusive to overturn. This was given on the TMO, is that right, Tim?
Yes. Well, the referees had the ultimate decision, but based on the TMO footage, the referee was happy enough to give the try, which I can understand if Leicester fans feel aggrieved by. I mean, they should have put the game to bed and should have taken their chances. And they had plenty of chances. And I think this is one of those, at this level, it was one of those where I was thinking, how many more times are Leicester going to go for the corner on a penalty and not get over the line versus taking 3 points? And hindsight's 20/20, isn't it? But in this sort of occasion, and particularly when we get to knockouts, and I think I'm right in saying, Phil, that the number of points that are scored drops quite dramatically during the dropouts generally, during the knockouts generally. And so taking 3 points is quite important. That said, Leicester have got a home tie, so.
Yes, they have.
Yeah.
And they'll be playing
Edinburgh.
Edinburgh, who had a nightmare.
Well, did they?
I think so.
Let's talk about this one, because this is about game management and what you do. So Edinburgh got a good win against Saracens in the final game of the weekend. We've talked about the first, now let's talk about the last game of the weekend. With 4 minutes to go, Saracens score. Ben Earl again, who's just awesome. He's so frightening when he runs. He's so...
Well, yeah. And
you would not want to tackle him low.
And I really enjoy the way... I mean, you can't see it explicitly, but you can sort of see the communication of when Maori gets the ball and Ben Earl is on the inside of him and that smart runs get on the outside and the constant communication to let him know, give me the ball, give me the ball, give me the ball. And then Maori's... How is his name? Maui?
Irony Maui.
Maui, yeah.
Or Maui.
His timing... Spot on.
Yeah, awesome.
Absolutely spot on.
Great. So Edinburgh did really well and they won the game. They beat Saracens, which doesn't happen often in Europe. And 4 minutes on the clock, they are 6 points up, which puts Edinburgh in a position where they will qualify for the knockouts. They will qualify in fifth position on tries scored. Mm. Their points difference was the same as Saracens. Therefore, they just needed another score, and go on, pick it up saying they had a nightmare.
Who had a nightmare?
Well, you said Edinburgh.
Oh, right, sorry. What are you talking about? Yeah, well, it's a nightmare in terms of either the coaches didn't know what was required, that's a nightmare. The coaches did know what was required, and they didn't tell the players. And that the players, if some of them knew what was required, they didn't tell the scrum half, or not all of them did. So when Purgos kicked the ball out, he thought he was doing the right thing. Now, you know, the end result, I think Edinburgh could go to Leicester. I think they could win. But the end result isn't a good one if half your team are thinking, yeah, let's go and score a try, and half of them are thinking, let's kick it out. In fact, actually, in a way... They probably got off a little bit lucky there, because if half of them are attacking with the intent to score a try, and the others are not, that sounds like a recipe for absolute disaster at ruck time, or you know, urgency to ruck, or half of them are thinking of picking and going. So yeah, wasn't a great way for Edinburgh to finish.
The counterfactual is important. Is what would Edinburgh's final position have been had they wanged a pass, Saracens intercepted, and then they lost the game?
Well, yeah, they could lose. Yeah.
Well, I don't think it makes any difference.
Because...
As in, I don't think they could have dropped down a position in the table. Because, so they were... So if they lose that...
Yeah.
They got a 4-point win. If they lose that, they go from a 4-point win to a 1-point loss because they didn't have a bonus point and Saracens could only, if they got a converted... try get 1 point ahead of them. They would have been level on league points with Harlequins, but they would have had significantly positive points difference.
And
they would
have been 15 well.
Points up.
Oh no, they wouldn't have had more wins. Well, no, they wouldn't same, have had. No, they would have had the same. Yeah, but their same points difference would have been better. Yeah,
yeah, the points difference would have been better. So they could, and this is the interesting thing. But I forgive them for it. They couldn't have dropped down a table point, but I'm not entirely sure they would have actually thought that far ahead and thought that through at the start. Arguably, they should have done.
Is it not someone's job to have thought this stuff through?
Yes, it is.
We talk about teams being prepared. Is. Yeah.
Yeah, it probably is.
That does change it. It was a shot to nothing. They had... Literally.
There was no risk.
Literally, yeah. They had nothing to lose.
Yeah, there was zero risk from them trying it. They could not drop down. They could not get a worse situation, but they could have improved their situation and guaranteed a home last 16 place.
Well, that is because it reminded me of the end of the New Zealand-England game in the sense that New Zealand had managed to pin England back a bit, and they thought, you know what, we'll take 25 all because we don't want to risk losing it. There was something on the line for England there, as in a draw versus a loss, but equally there was a win there. Potentially, this does shift it. There was nothing to be lost. But what, because the context is that Saracens had just flown out of the blocks and clattered Edinburgh to the point where you could go, oh, I can see a Saracens penalty coming here.
Yeah. But we'll say this about...
So they should have known... in an ideal world, they really should have known. Someone should have known that, and I'm sure they'll learn from that and get whatever communication channels are necessary. And that's a little message to everyone else to...
Yeah, I will say, I thought Edinburgh was superb. I thought they were the best team of the two by far.
Pierre McSchuman was awesome.
Wasn't he just?
Yeah.
Whoever the number seven is, never heard of him. He looked phenomenal. And it was only Saracens, like, extra human efforts in the face of adversity which made this look respectable, because Saracens are still an amazing team. They weren't as good as Edinburgh today. They had that stint in defence with 13 guys. That was amazing. You know, Ben Earl trying to claw it back was amazing, but they were outclassed, and I think this is a real concern for Saracens. They're getting older. Billy doesn't look like he's as impactful as he used to be with the ball in hand in particular, and maybe he is actually. But maybe just because they've got so many fewer options than they used to have to run the ball, he can be targeted. So, you know, his effectiveness is starting to wane. They're lacking just that little bit of class at nine. Goode is a great 10, but you know, when everything is just starting to creak a bit and everyone's getting a bit older, Saracens have got some real issues on the horizon, I feel.
And England maybe have an issue on the horizon, because Jamie George went off with a head knock, so that's one to watch.
As did Elliot Daly.
Correct.
So you look at those two and you're thinking, I think Elliot, look, Hooker goes down, find another one. There's not many other Elliot Daly's. That is a far bigger concern, particularly if you're going to have Farrell. Farrell Daly, 10-15.
Well, Saracens kind of have another Elliot Daly in Max Malins a little bit.
Yeah, he's cool, isn't he? He is cool. But he's off to Bristol.
Yes.
I
was thinking more for England in 2 weeks' time.
Yeah, if I was Saracens and Bristol come knocking for Max Malins, I think I'd go, you can't have him, but you can have Elliot Daly. You may as well do the Bill Belichick and get rid of a guy right at his prime who's 31, rather than get rid of Malins, because I think Bristol got a hell of a player there.
Well, that's an argument. It's definitely an argument there.
The interesting side of it is. I say interesting, but where we can compare and contrast to, say, football, and if you look at Liverpool, who've just got rid of their star striker, left-sided striker, who's just gone to Bayern Munich, whose name is...
Mane.
Sadio Mane.
Yep.
They could sell him for value, whereas in rugby you don't get any value for trading players.
Yeah,
you almost never trade for money, so that is a slight difference that makes it a bit more complicated. So you're almost incentivized to retain players until the end of their contracts, rather than let them go for value partway through the contract. So obviously Malins has come to the end of his contract, therefore time to let him go. Whereas Elliot Daly has a little bit more time on his.
Yeah, he'll be in the elite Bristol crew, which is a nice place for any rugby player to be.
Yeah, yeah. You turn left in the car park, not right.
Oh yeah. Oh, hold on.
I'll tell you what. Let's talk about one more game from the weekend before we depart from non Heineken Champions Cup. The Largan Beardmore Bowl.
Didn't see a second of it.
Really?
No.
Oh yes.
It was good.
Oh yes.
It was good. That atmosphere sounded great, didn't it, Phil?
I would love to be there. And I thought it was a really interesting game, because Ulster have had not the best last 4, 5, 6 weeks. And if you said they were weak to any one type of team, you'd say they're weak to a big pack, particularly late on, where Ulster have fired their shots and they're kind of running on empty a little bit. And this was not entirely the reverse of that, but they scored their tries. They scored the winning tries late on, when historically they would have been tiring in the bigger pack. the bigger, more physical pack would have been getting on top. And I thought it was a very, very good all-round performance from Ulster to not only shut down Sale, but to score a couple of good tries early on and then win the arm wrestle late on, which is something they've really struggled to do, certainly recently. So I was really pleased to see it, and it meant they qualified ahead of Sale.
Yeah.
Sale go out.
So Sale got to travel to Cardiff to play them in some competition. I don't believe really that teams win and lose on a few missing players. Sale were missing a front rail who knocked each other out a week before last. Josh Beaumont, I've not seen him start a game for years.
They only had England's Bevan Rod starting at loose head. So yeah, really bad times.
Yeah, but Bevan Rod's a very particular prop, isn't he? He's not a prop for all seasons.
You can't be saying they're missing. You had Bevan Rod up against and James Harper up against Andrew Warwick and Joe Tumanger Allen. You go, that's all right. That's okay.
Yeah, but
Scotland international, Ewan Ashman at hooker.
Yeah, I mean, it's not as if you only use one loose head or one tight head per game. You need two of them.
Yeah, Ross Harrison.
Ross Harrison's not seen a rugby field for about a year. I mean, Joe Jones, love the guy. I've not seen him on the Sale bench for ages. In fact, he probably played. Wouldn't be surprised if his last game was like Doncaster. Or
the
something.
Bench is where this game was won. I reckon you'd surely agree, Phil. Six internationals came off it and took the game away from Sale.
Yeah, it was the last 20 minutes where this was won. It was an arm wrestle for most of the game, and that's why I'm most pleased, because that is often the area of the game that it gets away from Ulster. So it was very positive to see them win it, and the Vermeulen try after.
Yeah.
There was a couple of incidents late in the first half where Ulster, I think, either should have scored or actually did score, but it wasn't given. But to see it given late on in the second half by Vermeulen was quality. It was it's a good win. Good after JB's other team, Benetton, got one over on my boys in the most recent, the preceding Lagenbeer Moor Bowl. This was good to get a win.
Mm.
I don't like the format of the competition. I hope it is changed. I hope there are fewer teams. However, I will say that the fact that Sale won their first game by battering Ulster and then haven't won since, and Ulster didn't win until this one, and Sale dropped down to the Challenge Cup, and Ulster sneak in and have the joy of facing Leinster.
Do you know, I think this is such a dangerous game for Leinster. I think Ulster are ridiculously dangerous. Now, Leinster are heavy favourites, but if there's a team that's going to find a chink, or more likely, if there's a team that's going to throw it around a bit and really take it to Leinster, it'll be Ulster, because they can score. Like, their backs are really, really dangerous.
So I agree. This is probably, if you look at the bottom half teams in both sides of the competition that Leinster could be playing, I think Ulster would be the one that they'd least like to play. Yeah. Of the eight available teams, I still think Leinster are heavy favourites, but I think Ulster have got a chance.
I do.
They've got a chance of playing really well and then valiantly losing at the end.
That is the most likely scenario whenever Ulster take the field, Tim.
I agree with that. I agree.
Yeah.
Did either of you see the Leinster performance against the impeccably dressed Racing 92?
No.
They did look good, didn't they? I've got to say, Racing and Toulouse's stash is outstanding.
Isn't it?
Isn't it just? Both are amazing. And I've got to say, Christian Wade on the wing in that kit, which is amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. Were they in the all-white one?
Yeah,
it's
exceptional. The collar. It's the collar on the Toulouse and the Racing kit. It's so beautiful. You could imagine them popping a little tie and a blazer over the top of it and it looking
great.
Well,
they did used to come out in blazers. So people come out in tracksuit tops. I'm sure Racing came out for it could have been a playoff, it could have been a league game. I'm thinking it might even be the final, actually.
And just on that Toulouse one, Jack Willis looks better in that Toulouse kit than he's ever looked in any kit.
Yeah.
He looks outstanding
in it.
It's
something about the Toulouse kit, isn't it? I mean, the red one's good. The black one, though. The black one is to die for.
I like the red one.
My favourite from the weekend, my favourite player attire, player aesthetics from the weekend was Christian Wade wearing that Racing 92 kit. Yeah.
So it's not Christian Wade.
Which is white. Well, it's white with a hint of grey, like just a faint hint of grey. But then he accompanied it with white leggings as well.
Yes, he did.
And ordinarily, I'm not the biggest fan of leggings, but I think he just looked amazing.
So I think you're wrong, incredible. Unfortunately. I think the best-looking guy in that kit is Cameron Wachey. I think Cameron Wachey looks absolutely phenomenal. Rising in the air like a salmon to retrieve balls.
What did you think of him looking like that this weekend then?
I don't know, because I don't even know if he played. I didn't see the game.
Well, he's out of the Six Nations, so...
Oh, no! Did he get injured last week?
You might have struggled to see him this week.
Yeah, no, I watched him in against... They wore it against Harlequins.
Yes. Yeah. But
who's the Racing, like... not director of rugby, but he's like the...
No, he is director of rugby.
No, further up the chain and used to be like in very much Cameron Wokey's in that mould. What's his name?
No, kind of.
You know, what's the guy's
Yannick
name?
Yannick Nianga.
That is a guy I would love to see in that Racing kit.
Yes, quite.
He would look
incredible. Yannick Nianga is actually director of rugby. I'm sure he is. And then they've got a head coach structure.
Oh, okay, maybe he is.
They've got like a... they've got that dream job structure. Do you know the one which Thingy had at Gloucester? What's his name? David Humphreys. So it goes like...
Master of everything, but not carrying none of the cap none of it.
So you've got a CEO ahead of you and all the commercial team, and then you've got David Humphreys, and then he's got an extremely...
Ewan Ackerman,
who apparently didn't do any coaching either. So then it's down to all the other coaches. That's the job. The old Gary Gold job, where you've got Toby Booth and bloody Mike Ford working for you. Now that's a coaching team.
I was going to say, is it a bit like the Gary Gold setup, which is good? It's good getting your Malbec Sundays, Mondays, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays until you get fired.
Yes, isn't it? Well, okay. Just going off a tangent. Are there any current coaching super teams? So I'd say that Bath was a super team. Saracens are always a super team.
Yeah,
like they've always got the next great coach underneath Mark McCall somewhere.
Less so now, but when they had Gustard, Borthwick, Sanderson.
Yes, Jesus. Is it any surprise they were so good?
Yeah.
And all perfectly legal. They don't need to be in the salary cap. That's absolutely fine.
Who else have Leinster got besides Leo Cullen as the DOR and Big Stew?
They'll have loads. They'll have loads. If
I can't remember.
Is Contopomi still there?
Yeah. Yeah, he's one of them. So that's a bit of a...
Yeah,
that's a
pretty heavyweight.
That's a pretty heavyweight.
Well, Leicester, it was kind of sort of... It was under the radar super team. Borthwick, Sinfield, Waters. And then Wiggy on top of it. So that wasn't too bad, but they weren't that established. Exeter are too internal, really, to call them anything like that. Pat Lam would never let an outside influence in. He's too much of a psychopath. that's probably it. We've not seen a coaching super team for that. Oh, Harlequins, are they a coaching super team?
Yeah, probably are. Adam Jones, Jerry Flannery, Nick Evans. Yeah, they are. Yeah, 100%. Yeah. They are.
That's a good one.
Tobias Matson.
That's a great one.
Tobias Matson. Heading up.
Who else is at Montpellier? Because you've got Saint-André there. He must have some intellect around him.
Yes, because he doesn't coach. He just picks up the phone and recruits.
Exactly.
But they play terrible rugby, so who is it? Oh! Where's Teague?
Rory Teague. He's at...
Racing?
I think he's at Racing, yeah, with... No, who's... John O'Gibbs and Rory Teague are both at Clermont.
That's right.
Well,
John O'Gibbs was at Clermont. Yeah.
Oh, has he been fired?
Exactly.
Yeah, after last week's game against Leicester.
I bet he'll end up... Tell you what, I'd love to know who Leinster's new head coach will be. Because they've got to be considering Dave Rennie.
Well, Gregor Townsend was the one that was hotly rumoured last week. Gregor Townsend is one. Dan McFarland is another.
Oof.
And... Yeah, Dave Rennie has got to be on the radar now.
There's some big names out there who are available, should Leinster want them.
I think Gregor Townsend would be a good fit. And people think of Gregor Townsend, the player, like this expansive, but actually he doesn't. His teams don't play like that.
I'm not sure he was.
Scotland team's quite pragmatic.
I'm not sure he'd make a great fit. But then he seemed. And the other issue is, I don't think Scotland have a ready-made replacement. Dave Rennie.
Dave Rennie.
He's got
Dave
the Glasgow connection.
Dave Rennie to Scotland makes sense. The thing about Leicester is, it's almost like you can't be too big a name or too big a character.
For Scotland?
No, for Leicester.
Oh, for Leicester.
You have to be willing to come in and fit into their organisation, like the recruitment fella they've got, who's awesome, Wilksy.
Yeah.
And the whole, you sort of have to come in and set, you're not going to have like a superstar name that's going to come in and bring a whole backroom team and bring his way of doing it, and you're the main man, like a Gatland sort of dictator. Yeah. You do
that
not
be flying.
You do not get that at Leicester.
Hmm. Yeah, I think Leicester will stick with Wigil.
I'd like to see Dan McFarlane go, purely because his stock seems to be waning a little at Ulster, and I think he's absolutely brilliant. So I'd like to see Dan McFarlane in the Premiership.
Oh, at Leicester.
I agree.
Sorry, I was talking Leinster.
Oh, no, Leicester.
No, sorry, I was talking Leinster because, of course, Stu Lancaster's off.
Yeah.
So they're going to need a new head coach there. Well, so hang on a minute. So were you just saying that Townsend might go to Leicester?
Yes.
I thought Townsend going to Leinster is what you were saying.
No, Townsend to Leicester.
Oh, right. Townsend to Leinster sounds more like Townsend to Leicester. Do you know what I think?
I think Dan McFarlane would be a great fit. I'd feel sad if he ends up losing, taking the bullet at Ulster, because I think he's so good. But equally, maybe that has run its course, Phil. What do you think?
I don't think he should get the bullet. I've got massive, massive faith and respect in McFarland. I think if anything happens, he's more likely to move elsewhere, because I think someone else will see his talent and give him an opportunity to do more with more resources. But I could be wrong, because Ulster, ignoring this weekend's result, have been on the back of a horrendous, horrendous run. But that is also on the back of a long period of time where I would argue that overperforming, and he's also been interested next season, and they've made some interesting signings for next season.
I need to get this. They have. I was going to say we've got some great emails. I need to get some. I need to get this phone able to charge. And is yours charging there, Jamie?
Yeah,
it is working.
Yeah.
Oh, it's just not.
I'm not just plugging the cable into my phone because it's fun. What is going on? You tried putting it in both ways. Way! Yay!
Well, just in case I lose it, let me read this one on Exeter, who finished second in their pool.
Yep.
Which is no mean feat whatsoever. Where is it? Oh, we've got so many emails.
You know what? I've not looked at the emails for ages.
Wow.
I leave that to you, Tim.
Wow.
So we answer the emails on...
Oh, here we go. Christopher Johnston. Contact edchasers@gmail.com. A few reflections on the... Well, he's crossed out the ins and just put outs at Exeter, because there's a lot of players leaving. He says, one, it's a shame to see good players leave. Two, we're not used to regrettable losses, and in recent years could only really point to two, Nick White and Thomas Francis. Thomas Francis for hitting rucks as much as holding up scrums.
Yep.
Three, other moves, Waldrum leaving created space for Simmons. Parling leaving created space for Hill. Hill leaving created space for Jenkins, etc. Four, reasons for optimism. Firstly, Rob Baxter is involved and he has a plan. See the three above. And look at those confirmed or rumoured recent departures, where they were signed from. Thomas Francis came from London Scottish. Sam Skinner came from Taunton Titans. Johnny Hill from Gloucester's second team. Harry Williams from Jersey. Tom O'Flaherty from Bridgend. He says, we're fifth in the league, despite having no set piece, and at home in the Heineken Cup knockouts after the least convincing 40-3 win you'll ever see. Who box kicks versus 12 men? If we don't, A, recruit a new tight head, and B, and scrum half, and B, tie our Welsh lads down to 10-year contracts, and C, Josh Hodd signs for Bath, you can ignore all of the above. I think he makes a great point.
Oof.
And we're talking about directors of rugby, that Phil was just talking about Dan McFarland. Rob Baxter is someone I will trust to overhaul and regenerate and come back again and to have achieved what they've done in the Champions Cup and finish second in their pool and get a home tie against French team. Who have they got?
Don't know, because I have not... I did have the...
My phone's
they've
back.
Got Montpellier. Current French champions.
Yes. They'll crush them. They are rubbish.
To get a home tie against Montpellier, that is a that's a game I'd love to be at.
Yes.
That'd be a good game.
Right, can I tell you about the game that I watched? It's far more interesting than this European nonsense.
Go on.
Right, so I Go went on. To watch Cambridge versus Sale FC. So all the games yesterday were frozen off. You right there, Tim?
Yeah, I'm just trying to charge my phone. You carry on.
Okay, I want to... Okay. Looks like I've lost my charger now. I was going to charge my iPhone, but you know, you charge yours, mate.
What percentage is yours on, mate? Because mine's on 2.
Well, I wanted to charge my iPad. It doesn't matter. We'll discuss it off air. Yeah. So, I've heard good things about Cambridge. I've heard good things because last year, they had the top try scorer in Nats 1, I believe, who was, which position? Does anyone know?
Hooker.
It is indeed the hooker. And these boys are massive. Absolutely massive. Sale were pretty good. They didn't really get the rib of the green towards the end. But here's the interesting thing about what I was watching. Undoubtedly, the players are much bigger than the players that I play with. Fundamentally, what they were doing in open play was, well, exactly what we do, which is a pod of three, you either go forward or you pull it out the back. So another pod of three, you either go forward or pull it out the back. It feels to me that rugby is getting very stale in almost, well, in almost every level with open play. Because I can't remember the last time I saw anything more unusual than a pod of three, which they play out the back.
So I think you're right in terms of the principles, but I think the critical element is just how slick and quickly it's done.
Yeah.
I'll give you the example just this weekend of, if you watch that Leinster versus Racing 92, there was some of the Leinster tries, and admittedly it's late on where they really ran away with it, but the handling of their backs and the lines and the pace that they put on the ball was the same stuff you've seen before.
Yeah.
It was done at a different level with the incisive handling and the incisive pace and angles, and it just made what is a very, very good Racing 92 team and defence look average at best.
Well, I'll tell you what I thought was most interesting about watching this game, because you can talk about rugby in general now, is neither team really had a single line break the whole game, because they're playing the sort of same sort of patterns. They're both playing pod of three out the back, and both the teams had a great defence. So no one was making any odds. The only difference
would be... Need to lower the tackle height, that would have sorted out.
Oh yeah, if only. It's like, watching this game, it's like open play is something just to get through. Like, it's not really that important. Let's just get through it and hope that the other team makes a mistake, or that we don't make a mistake, or someone wins a penalty. It's something to fill in the time between lineouts, penalties and scrums, where the real action happens. And the other thing as well is, because the attacking rugby in that one, at least in this game, had been completely taken away from both sides in open play, their kicking game was really interesting. So they're much more tactically astute than, say, TOC HR. But that would make sense, right? Because, you know, TOC H, when we move the ball against other teams and when they move the ball against us, if they move it well, they'll get line breaks. So that's where you would practice, because that's your best way to progress the ball. That one, I don't think it is. But what you notice, so Tom Brady was playing, and obviously Tom Brady has had a career at Sale, at Leicester Tigers. He knows what it is to be a pro rugby player.
Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Yeah, exactly. And what I loved being able to do is watch him play. Because when you watch the pros play, it's too loud, you can't really hear anything. You watch the amateurs play, and they're very quiet. Well, with Brady coming from the pros, and now he's playing at that one, listening to him communicate with his kickers is fascinating, because he's telling them where he wants the ball, what type of kick he wants the ball, whereabouts, how many guys are back, and he's not in. I think he'd openly admit he's been in better professional shape, but like just the way he talks is phenomenal. So there's so much to learn from that one if you're a young player, because you can actually watch these guys who've done it before at a high level and how they conduct their business. I thought it was absolutely fascinating.
You've got two Nat 1 guys on the podcast with you.
Well,
ask me and Phil whatever you want, whenever. JB. We'll give you some advice.
That's very kind. That's very kind of you boys. Very kind. Yeah, so really, really good. But once Cambridge were ahead, their maul is frightening. When they get it going, it's frightening. They are huge. They're absolutely huge. The other thing which surprised me as well, actually, was the Nat... I thought the boys would be better conditioned than they were. There were some heavy set lads wandering around. Let's put it that way. That's the politest way that I could put it.
Phil will know this even better than me, because I only played Nat 1, whereas Phil played Championship as well and was at the top end of Nat 1. And Phil knows that the one thing, a type 5 forwards at level 3 and at level 2 are frightening beasts.
They are. Cambridge scrum is excellent.
Phil, you still there?
I am.
Oh,
yes.
I'm just imagining you with 1,000 yards there, thinking of some of the props and mutant second rows you played against down the years.
Well, I played against and played with. I played with for a number of years, multiple league and Champions Cup winner Petrus Duplessis, who's currently in charge of the Australian national team scrum, working with, unless he gets fired before he gets the opportunity, working with Eddie Jones, no less.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There were some fairly handy boys in the Type 5. And I think it's fair to say that the kind of Tier 2 and Tier 3 Type 5, there's no let up in size compared to the Premiership. If anything, there is a tiny bit of let up in explosivity. But that's about it.
But it's still a pond that the Premiership should and will go fishing in.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
100%. 100%.
There's this weird thing that happens in higher level rugby before you get to the Premiership, right? So Premiership, they do have line breaks because they're very good. But like Sale have got this fly half called James Robbins, and you watch him play and he is a phenomenal rugby player, like really skillful rugby player. And you watch him in this team, you think, you are wasted, right? And you're not the tool that you need for that one. The tool they need for that one, you'd probably be better off with somebody... trying to think of the player who can kick really far and defend really hard but doesn't have any skills. You want that guy, right? That is the guy you want fly half for Nat 1.
Just like a brilliantly robotic, metronomic fly half.
Yeah, maybe like a Damien Try. I mean, that's not very fair on Damien Try and also having a French international.
I'm thinking more like Stephen Myler might be a good shout.
Stephen Myler, yeah. But
just
Stephen
great,
Myler.
Great kicking game.
Also had some real skills and could play fly.
To be fair, yeah.
He had some real... So I don't like saying that about Stephen Myler because he has real skills. The Nat 1 version of that David Skrella. Like, just about pass enough to, look like a fly off, but ultimately just a big guy that kicks. But could he defend?
You're thinking of Kelly Haimoina.
Kelly Haimoina, ideal. That's who we want.
Yes, Phil.
Yeah, the Italian Kiwi. 115 kg fly half.
That would be the perfect Nat 1 fly half. I'm looking at this guy with all the skills in the world, and he needs about 25% of his skill set. The rest of it is just pure grind and kicking. That's the weird thing about that sort of level of rugby. I bet it's the same.
Sam Bedloe, if you want to take someone out of the Premiership, put him in there. Although he's got skills as well, but anyway, regardless.
And his brother's captain of Rosendale. Do you know that?
Who is it? Is that right?
He is, yeah. Mm. So yeah, that was that was my summary of Sale FC. But I tell you what, if
how come you went down there to watch it?
Everything else was frozen off. So I was on the way to watch Tarleton versus Aspel, which is about an hour away in deepest darkest Lancashire. And then on the way there, I remembered that Sale are playing in Carrington. So Sale had to, I don't know how they managed to get Carrington up and running, but they did, in fairness. So it was moving from Hayward Road to Carrington.
Isn't there heated pitches there?
Maybe there is, actually. Yeah, maybe that could be it. But it was ace. You know, it was really good. When I hang up my boots, if this law change happens, oh no, because they all have the law change as well, so I can't even watch FC. I have to drive to Caldy or watch Sharks every weekend. I don't want to do that.
Caldy got another win, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. Oh, don't know.
I think Caldy had another win.
Don't know is the answer.
Was that last weekend?
Tarleton got a win, which is bad for us because they'll be top of the table now. And allegedly they got it because
Tarleton sounds like a village.
It is a village.
You shouldn't be being the mighty Toc H if they are mighty at all.
They are incredibly mighty.
Shouldn't be being beaten by a village.
Well, we've not been beaten by a village, FYI. No, but they're a good team. Good, good team. But apparently they won this because last play of the game, referee gave them a penalty. They called for the scrum and he said, scrum. But then they noticed that there's a sort of gap in the Aspel defence or whatnot. Tapped them, went, scored a try. According to Aspel, last play of the game.
So. Caldy beat Nottingham.
Wow.
To go above Nottingham in the table.
So where are they placed now?
Eighth.
Fair play.
Yeah. London Scottish in the basement. I mean, they shouldn't have let a previous head coach who's doing some great things at Richmond. So.
Do you know who the head coach is now?
No. Graham?
Nope.
No, is he gone as well?
I don't know. Well, maybe he's part of the team. No, I don't know. It's Brian Redpath.
Is that right?
Yeah. Mm. Interesting. So yeah, that was all the Northwest rugby in the world. That was it.
JB, did you see any other games in the Champions Cup or indeed Challenge Cup? Although I think that's far less likely.
I saw a bit of Toulouse because I love watching Toulouse, and I thought Toulouse. If you're going to watch a game of rugby,
great game that
you're going to watch.
Really
Toulouse,
good. Yeah. Toulouse Munster was brilliant.
What a classic matchup.
20 points to 16. Now, Munster are a team, much like Ulster, actually, Phil, that haven't been doing brilliantly, but I think there's... When you look at the personnel, I think that Dan McFarlane's doing all right with what he's got with Ulster and maybe has overachieved in previous years. And I'd say the same with Graham Rowntree as well.
Mm. I think we've got to see with Rowntree. Obviously, your man who's gone to Bath... led it in previous years and arguably underachieved. And this year has been a bit of a mixed bag in the URC. But
it has.
They're always formidable in Europe. Partly because Tomlin Park is just such an intimidating place to go to, and partly because they get one of the best, if not the best, travelling support wherever they go in Europe. Mm. But they're always difficult to play. And that means that they go, so they qualify. I'm just looking at who they're going to be playing.
So lose a second, so they play the Bulls at home.
Yeah. So Toulouse play the Bulls.
Yeah.
And Munster go to play.
You're right, Jay. Jay's off. He's like I make a big statement when I go to the loo. JB just snuck out, a little tiptoed out.
But JB's,
he'll be back.
JB's, he's gone.
Yeah.
So interestingly, I'm currently using my 4-year-old's tablet to scroll through. I'm using my phone to record and my 4-year-old's tablet to scroll through the results, which has forced me onto BBC. Now, interestingly. The BBC has Munster's March European Champions Cup last 16 game away at Sale.
Oh, sorry, I thought you... Oh, no, that's not... Well, that's definitely not right.
Which is not right.
No.
And then I've just gone on to the league to see Munster in sixth position in Pool B.
They go away to play
third position in Pool A, which is away to Sharks. So yeah. BBC have confused the two Sharks in the competition from Sale versus Durban. So instead of going to Sale, just jump across the Irish Sea, they've got a 15-hour flight.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they should do better than that, but given the benefit of the doubt on that. So, yeah. Munster go to Sharks. They put up a good fight in Toulouse and they made them fight. And I would say of Toulouse and La Rochelle, they will be better come the knockout stages and as we get towards the money weeks. But they weren't brilliant. Neither side was that great.
Yeah, and both are unbeaten. But they've not been... They up to now, the only really convincing unbeaten... So there's three unbeaten teams, Toulouse, La Rochelle... And the one convincing unbeaten team to this point, Leinster.
Leinster are out on their... In previous weeks, we've said it's three teams maybe in the top tier. Leinster are in a league of their own currently, based on the evidence we've seen.
Leinster won't win this. They will not win this.
Yeah, I think I agree. But right now... They're miles ahead, just based on what we've seen, but it's about to get harder. And if ever there's a flat track bullies statement to be made, so Leinster, they've conceded 34 points in four games, which puts them by far the lowest points conceded. They've scored 184 points, which puts them by 50 points or nearly 50 points, the most points scored in all the games. Their points difference is miles ahead of anyone else.
They're 79 ahead of positive 79 points ahead of the next nearest, which is more than double the next nearest.
Yes. They're the only team to have got four bonus points wins. They are in all aspects so far, they've been miles ahead. But when the rubber meets the road and they go, well, and they host one of the teams, one of the big teams, as happened in the URC last season, they could come unstuck. Although I do think, for my money, they are still the favourites. And the way they played this weekend was excellent, was really, really good. But that doesn't mean they will win the whole thing.
Yep, completely agree. Maybe the best thing to happen to them will be Ireland losing or not doing too well in Six Nations, because that'll be about the only time that these players suffer any kind of hardship.
Mm. JB and Tim, did you see any other games?
I was at the Northampton game, which I'm imagining, because the Quinns Sharks game was on the other channel. I basically imagine, and also Northampton game was on ITV. I'm imagining it was one of those where I was like, oh, I'm really glad to be here. And I get to, you know, have a good old chat to Rog on the touchline. And
so he
I was
says
like, nobody's watching this.
He says some fairly controversial things about Northampton,
didn't he? Ronan Nagara said he wasn't very happy with their performance, La Rochelle. I think he had a point. Mm-hmm. Wasn't very happy with their performance. And, you know, and when it was put to him that, oh, but, you know, you handily beat Northampton. He said, yeah, but Northampton aren't the top team. I found the honesty refreshing.
Yeah, he
says because he's right.
It's like, what did he say? He said to the lads, something like, we spoke about Northampton, they used to be a top team, but they're not anymore and they're having some trouble and so are we, or something like that. Was that more like it? Or actually, did he say this to you?
No.
Oh, right, I was going to say, if he said it to you, maybe I'll just shut up and let you tell me.
No. Well, I didn't get access to Rog in an official capacity. I had a chat to him.
I was going to say, but, you know, you're the most important guy there.
Well, no, he wasn't obligated to do anything. In fact, there was a question mark over whether he was allowed to do anything, because he's still serving his touchline ban. So.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
No idea.
Yeah. That touchline ban has been incredibly strictly enforced.
Yeah, hasn't it?
what was he banned for?
Oh, I can't even remember the misdemeanors.
Wasn't it abusing like the fourth official?
Yeah,
that's not good.
10-week ban. It was.
Can I tell you something ridiculous which has happened in our club? ridiculous. Our second team lost last week, and we're doing really well. Really good second team. But they lost. Somehow, they've written a letter to the leagues complaining about the referee.
Oh, dear.
Is that not the most ridiculous thing you've ever heard? I think there should be a law, right, in rugby. You are only allowed to write a letter of complaint about the referee.
When you win.
If you win.
Yeah.
If you lose, you can shut up. Like, I think we lost like 34-33, something like that. Would they have written a letter if they missed the last conversion? Nope.
Well, I had a little chat today with our Raffy Quirks Broughton Park under 15s. So I was firstly disappointed that we weren't able to play Wilmslow, because that would have been a really good test.
You'll have a reasonable replacement, right?
No, we didn't manage to get any games. There's no games on, like you said, North West.
No games. Sorry, I thought you meant in the Cup for some reason.
No, Lancashire Cup, well, because Wilmslow are in Cheshire.
Of course they are.
But they're basically the best team in Cheshire. So
are they?
So we wanted to have a crack at the best team in Cheshire.
Damn right you do.
But we're in the quarterfinals of the Lancashire Cup, or the lads are in the quarterfinals of the Lancashire Cup, next Sunday. Vale
you should say I'm in the quarterfinals of the Lancashire Cup.
Vale of Lune away. Which is Lancaster way, isn't it?
It is. Well, it is Lancaster, yeah.
It is Lancaster. They're a very handy team.
Are they?
I don't know much about
them. Wonder if they're full of Lancaster grammar guys.
Yeah, probably.
So, do you know all this controversy at the moment?
No, let me just finish. So what I was saying to them today was just cementing it in their mind. It's like you've got a week to remember. This is a cup game. You're going to have it's going to be a home. It'll be, because it always is. And you just accept it. I'm not complaining. You go, quite often you get home refs. Cup games, you might feel like it's not going your way. You just have to get it in your mind right now. Get back 10, next job. And I've wanted to give them a week's plant that seed in their mind. So when it comes to if we lose 34-33, let's not have a chat about the ref in the clubhouse.
Yeah, exactly right. It's all about the next job. It's all about the next job. So Vale of Lune are good because they've got good links with Lancaster Grammar School. So I was talking to one of the Lancaster Grammar teachers, who's also one of the coaches, and it's very pertinent because, of course, we're talking about basically the banning of the game, and one of the reasons is it's unsafe for kids, and yada yada yada. And I think there is a good point made. Well, not a good point, but there is certainly a conflict, isn't there, between making kids play rugby and, you know, all the dangers that rugby entails. And I'm sympathetic to that, actually. If a kid doesn't want to play rugby, they shouldn't play rugby. But there should also be some sort of expectation that they try rugby. And I don't know how you balance it, right, without being, well, you know what I'm trying to say. So Lancaster Grammar, sort of to get around this problem, they are okay with saying, look, if you're, you know, they'll know, if you don't fancy it, you don't have to play, but you are expected to try it. So in the first
year, like eating Brussels sprouts at Christmas.
Exactly right. So the way that they divide up their rugby department, because they've got quite a few good coaches, is the best coach is the first team coach. But he's also the first coach that the kids meet when they're in first form to get them enthused about the game, and then they proceed through the other coaches. And I thought that's quite a cool strategy. That so whoever the best coach is at the time, or should I say, the majority of their coaching resource will go to the first 15. But the boys have just started. Also, the boys have just started from scratch.
That's clever. Mm. I like it.
Isn't it? So and we'll be expecting to smash Vale of Lune then, and all those uppity grammar.
Well, I was going to say you've created a little narrative there. If it is the not uppity, not at all, but it's basically grammar school boys against comprehensive.
Imagine how much better
grammar school lads from rural Lancashire against comprehensive school ruffians from the city.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Imagine
that if I were doing like BT Sport broadcast, that's the story there. Here come the ruffians.
Yeah. Imagine how much better those Lancaster Grammar kids think they are compared to your boys. Yeah, exactly. Imagine more studying for their 11 plus with their private tutors.
Do you ever find this with Tok H? But I was actually, in retrospect, I was actually quite glad we didn't have a game, because we've just had games week on week on week on week. Actually, the work you can do when you get an hour and a half chunk of time, the technical stuff you can get through is brilliant.
Oh, yeah.
It's great.
Completely agree.
Yeah, it's cool.
Any more Heineken Cup stuff? Because I really don't want to talk about it anymore.
So La Rochelle were average, but more than good enough to beat Northampton, who were not great. And I would just say, just on Northampton, I mean, in the back of their mind, they're like, a next job for them is the East Midlands derby, which is going to be an East Midlands derby without all the internationals.
Well, all the internationals, particularly Courtney Laws, who's injured.
Yes, I did speak to Phil Dowson about that after the game, and he said it's only a tight calf.
Oh, really?
Shouldn't be too serious, yeah.
Did you catch up with Courts, afterwards?
I didn't see Courts afterwards.
Oh.
But yeah, so we're gonna have like one of the showpiece events of a Premiership season, again, like much like last season, where both were in international windows in times when the internationals aren't playing. Which...
Don't worry about it, mate. The game's over soon, so there's only seven games left.
Quinn's Sharks, you saw a bit of that, didn't you, Phil?
I did. I had a lovely couple of hours with my youngest asleep on my chest watching this game. It was a cracking game. The first half was dynamite. From Lucarno scoring after...
2 minutes.
A few minutes, yeah. Yeah, not long at all.
Then Danny Kerr, Don Brandt, Murley.
Yeah. The other tries culminated by... The first half was culminated by the Ibanez-Beth try.
Yeah, what happened there?
I don't know if you... JB, have you seen this?
Yeah. What happened is, the ball was deemed to be out, and Ibanez-Beth is deemed to be bound onto the ruck by the full arm or whatnot. And he asks the question, is the ball out? The referee says, yes, it is, and off he goes, picks it up and scores.
Yeah, because Joe Marler, who was in front of the person with the ball, in front of where the ball was, didn't have a full arm bind, just had one hand on the backside of the man in front. Therefore, he's not part of the ruck. Therefore, the ball is out.
Exactly.
Well, yeah. The bit I'd add is, or the bit I'd correct is, Ibanez-Beth didn't ask the ref. He just went for it. But he went for it fully in the knowledge that this had happened like 10, 15 minutes earlier. And the ref had said, no, that's out because you're not bound properly.
Yes.
The Quinns player is not bound properly. So Ibanez-Beth has seen something happen 15 minutes earlier, identified that the ref is not going to penalise it because the Quinns player is not bound properly, seeing that Marler is not bound properly, and he was not bound up to the shoulder, he kind of resting a hand on the man in front of him, and so he just went for it and pinched the ball and then galloped in. It was about 40 metres that he galloped in.
Got some game.
And
yeah, it was impressive.
He saw a level of like intelligence from Ibanez-Beth, but it also saw a level of stupidity from Quinns. Marler being one, Danny Kerr being the other, who instead of, he had an opportunity to either pick the ball up or tackle Ibanez-Beth, and he appealed to the referee instead of doing
those
things. So yeah, I kind of think that is a great example to show kids: play to the whistle. Like, don't appeal to the referee. Play to the whistle.
And it also shows that, you know, if you asked for someone to describe three words or just describe Ibanez-Beth as a rugby player, it would all be about his size and his physicality and stuff. But he's clearly got a great rugby brain on him as well. And I remember in the games that JB, you and I used to play, Broughton Park level 6,
mm-hmm.
when I stepped down to that level, a level Phil wouldn't step down to because he didn't want to. He refused to step down to a level outside of the level 3. When I did, it used to happen a bunch of times where we would deliberately stand off at the line out, not engage the drive, and then I would just run round and pick the ball out of the back of their maul. And they used the number of scrum halves that go wild, and the refs just go, no, it's fine, carry on.
Yeah.
Like, knowing the laws, knowledge is power.
Isn't it? 100%. I always like the one where they score tries because there's no offside line over the try line. So the ball comes out, you just nip it on and touch it down.
Oh, yeah, when the scrum half doing that thing, getting the ball back like a caterpillar and it gets to the line, you can just run in, there's no offside, the ball's out.
We won a game against Blackburn doing that, like one of the last plays of the game. Ball was sort of caterpillaring out.
Were they wild?
Oh, yes. It's great win that. Still got relegated though, so didn't matter that much.
Is that the year you threw your medal in the bush or not?
Oh, no, we were doing all right that year. No. I should have found that medal last time I was up in Sedge.
So the other thing to mention about this game, not the amazing Nick David try or the very, very good Harlequins win against a very good Sharks team, is the weird, and it might have been mentioned in comms, but I had my sound right down, the weird facial hair of two of Harlequins' back three. I don't suppose either of you have noticed this, but Caden Murley and Nick David have the facial hair of a... God, how to describe this?
It's is it like an Amish Quaker or something like that?
No. It's like a 90s television magician has been asked to audition as the role of Satan in an upcoming musical. That is precisely what both of them... They've got like this weird little, like, sharp, pointy goatee thing, moustache goatee thing going
like,
on.
Like the CrossFit of Bridges.
I don't know who that is.
The
CrossFitter, Bridges.
I can't think of him, though. No. I'm just trying to look for a picture of Caden Murley and Nick David.
So are you a fan of it?
For two handsome, muscular men in their early to mid-20s, no, I'm not. They should be doing much, much better. I can only imagine it's some kind of weird bet. It doesn't accentuate their best features, let's put it that way.
Really? Oh dear. Well,
yes.
Good spot, Phil.
Next time you see Quinns, look out for that. I mean, I'm sure as they're accelerating their Maseratis out of the stoop, they look fantastic. But
like, you can't turn up for your first you can't turn up for a Six Nations England camp if Caden Murley with facial hair like that and meet a load of your new teammates and your new head coach. That he's going to shave before that, surely.
No, go for it. Own it.
It must be a bet. It must be a bet.
That's one of the greatest descriptions. That's one of the greatest descriptions ever that you gave there, Phil. So in terms of the other games, that was a fantastic game. Lyon beat the Bulls on Friday night, whatever. Bordeaux lost to Gloucester beat Bordeaux away, which is an impressive win.
They're both terrible, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, they're both not great, and Gloucester now get the joy of
La Rochelle
going and losing in La Rochelle, which will be a fun weekend anyway.
It'd be a great weekend.
Leinster beat Racing. Exeter, yeah, just we talked about just generally. I didn't see the game. Chris Chunza is a force on the loose. I really hope that Warren Gatland uses him. I wonder how they'll use him.
As a force in the loose?
But he's the real boy. He's the boy.
He will definitely get used. He's too good not to be used.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what position he plays for Dragons.
Yeah. Although in this game, Cast, for a period of time, had the remarkable honour of playing entirely without a back row, because they had a red card and two yellow cards, and that was applied to 6, 7, and 8 at the same time.
Yeah. Montpellier managed to get themselves into the knockout stages with a last-second Kobus Reinach try against London Irish at home. So, but again, this is kind of immaterial because of where this... Well, no, Montpellier could beat Exeter, but it's unlikely. So where this leaves us is, in terms of the fixtures for the quarterfinals, Leinster, far and away the best team, are playing against Ulster. Tricky. We've got Exeter, who are home to Montpellier. Exeter should do that one. The Sharks. Now, are they South African teams playing in Europe for the knockout, did I hear?
Oh, yeah. I have heard something like this, that there was part of an agreement that if they play in the knockout, they have to host the games in Europe. But I don't actually know.
So the Sharks will be hosting Munster somewhere. Saracens, we talked about their win. They host the Ospreys. That is a hard one to call. That's the hardest to call so far.
That should be a good game, though. Yeah.
Well, Munster against the Sharks, that's hard. That's tough as well.
Yeah, that's a good game. Well, I think La Rochelle Gloucester that's going to be a walkover, not a walkover, but that is home favourites, heavy home favourites.
Correct.
I think most of the rest of them are good games.
Yeah. So moving on with that, we've got what did I just say? Ospreys travel to Saracens. Yeah, you have got Leicester hosting Edinburgh, and I'm really glad with the fact that the Saracens just got ahead of Edinburgh. The one thing that does do is it meant that there wasn't an all premiership tie there which they could have been, which I just quite like. The Stormers are going to host Harlequins. Again, we'll see where that game will be played.
Yeah.
Toulouse.
That's an interesting point because obviously there's been some consternation of the South African teams playing in Europe. Probably rightly so, but certainly this weekend when Quins played the Sharks, it looked full. The Stoop looked absolutely rammed, and London is probably one of the five biggest populations of South African residents on the planet. Right. So it's getting a home attendances, big home attendances in Europe for South African teams is not that difficult to do.
Yeah, fair.
Hey, can I take us back to...
I'll just finish off the fixtures. We've got Quins travelling to Stormers, like I say. Toulouse host the Bulls. That'll be easy, easy for them.
Yes, and home win.
And Gloucester go to La Rochelle, like we say, who are going to get pumped.
Yes.
There we go. Claremont Sale, Leon Russing to the Challenge Cup.
I think there's some good fixtures there. I think a lot of those last 16 fixtures are still very much in the air to be decided. Depends on what happens on the day.
Only three top 14 sides is maybe the surprise. Mm. And
every single one of the Ultimate Fighting Rugby Championship Rainbow Cup teams, every single one qualified.
Correct.
Now, can we go back to the tackling debate for 1 second?
Yeah, sure.
I don't know if you've seen this, but there is a petition going around. Have you seen the petition? Have you signed the petition?
Can't hurt not to. So, yeah, I did.
So I signed it. I think I was number, like, 300. There's 150,000 rugby players registered in England. There are 63,741 signatures on this petition so far since Thursday.
Wow.
63,000. So when your councilman says that's just your opinion, it's not just your opinion. There's 63,000 people that bothered to sign a petition.
Just on that, Rob West, I forgot to go to any of the emails on the last podcast, which we've had some fantastic ones. So just one here, for example, from Rob West, who was just pointing out that he said, given Tim's instincts around the tackle height law being related to an attempt to create an NFL-type model, well, JB said something similar, like, anyway, a spectator, anyway, it doesn't matter, as well as the seeming lack of transparency and representation of RFU members, I can't help thinking about who this would benefit most and would have who would have the potential influence to make it happen. CVC maybe have the motive and the means, coincidence or conspiracy?
I don't really see a CVC link in here. I mean, CVC are like the dog that didn't bark so far in rugby. For all the supposed genius that they possess, they don't seem to be particularly smart or particularly active. So, you know, maybe, but I don't know. I think CVC were completely unprepared for what rugby was bringing.
Well, did we this week see the first positive influence of CVC? Not the aforementioned
the Cambridge
incredible high tackle law. Sorry, JB, go on again.
The Cambridge Mall?
No.
Go on.
No. The announcement, was it this week or last week, that there's going to be an insider documentary into the 2024 Six Nations?
Oh, yeah, there was, wasn't there?
So that to me read, and I might be putting two and two together, but that read as a CVC thing.
Yeah. I mean, they have been looking to do this for ages, though, haven't they?
Yeah, you don't have to be CVC to say that's a good idea.
Yeah,
that is a great idea.
I mean, we are just 10 years behind when we wanted to do this. They wanted to do it for, like, you know, the NFL training camp documentaries. I mean, they must be close to 20 years old now.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, but I think that is a very positive step. I think that'll be really, if they do it in the right manner and they follow the right individuals. They follow Finn Russell after playing England in the first weekend and then going out around Edinburgh, going to Frankenstein's in Edinburgh and having two bottles of Buckfast. That is what you want to see.
It's dynamite, isn't it? Absolute dynamite. Exactly. I want them to follow the French team.
Yeah.
I want to see the French team all smoking in the changing rooms and reading poetry.
Sadly, Wookie won't be playing.
I know. Well, hang on. 2024 Six Nations, did you not say?
Oh, sorry. Yes, fair point. Fair point. He'll be back.
Wookie will be back. He's essential.
Yeah, yeah. And Wookie having a couple of tabs and a couple of croissants before the game.
Delicious. Right.
And then going smoking everyone.
I'm just we've had so many great messages. I just want to quickly touch on this one from Trev Murley, who contacts us. He says, I drove into work this morning listening to the emergency pod and felt the need to email in with thoughts. A little bit of background. Much like others, growing up in rugby was front and centre of my life. I've represented my local team, the mighty St. Austell FC in Cornwall, from under-8s through to seniors. I moved away for a couple of years and stopped playing rugby. In 2020, due to COVID, we moved back, and I thought I'd head back to Tregorrick Park. Fast forward 2 years, and I'm proud to be captain in the second 15, the Sinners, in our first season of league rugby. As it stands, our first 15, the Saints, are flying high in their league in level 6. The Sinners are sitting third in our level 8 league, while our third 15, the Spartans, have a squad of 23 available for their fixture this weekend. So a lot of hard work has been done there at that club. Our club is a community club where any weekend you can either put on your boots with a bunch of mates for a run around or stand under the balcony with old boys and share a pint. Much like the discussion on the pod, I feel absolutely gutted by the news that broke surrounding the tackle height. My initial thought, trying to work out how this would work, is this the end of the choke tackle? Are we unable to rip the ball? That's a really good point.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
You can't rip the ball anymore.
I reckon the tackle height should be dictated by the ball. You can't tackle above the ball.
That's interesting. Well, you just hold the ball down by your bollocks.
Well, yeah, if that's how you feel ball security would be best served, you feel free. If you're holding the ball high, I get to target the ball. I can't hit above the ball, but I can hit the ball.
If you're particularly risk loving, you just hold the ball on your head in front of your face.
Yeah, you can't hit the head, but you can hit. But you have to hit on the ball or below. Solved.
Yeah. Anyway, it goes
I like
on.
It.
Yeah, interesting. He goes on and mentions lots more, but I just thought there's so many community clubs that are getting in touch, and he says I should also mention this comes against an emotional backdrop for the club this week. Today is the day, 2 days ago, we bid farewell to Robert Guppy Pollard, an ex-club captain and man who represented everything good about rugby and our club. Seeing the Saints family pull together to remember him only amplifies the importance of this game in our community. If ever you want a tour down in Cornwall, St. Austell would be more than happy to host.
Ooh.
Fowey isn't too far away if JB is looking for a berth.
Oh, nice, nice.
Somewhere to park your yacht. P.S. If you're wondering, my dad tells us we are in some way related to Caden Murley.
Wow. This is big.
Although my lack of pace and strength would argue against this. Well, if you can try and dig up someone in your family tree that can tell him to get that abomination off his face, Trev.
Wait. Does it give any indication what this fella does for a living?
Pardon?
Does it give any indication what this fella does for a living?
Down in St. Austell. He's probably, if he moved back during COVID, I bet he has a good job that he now does from home.
Stockbroker.
yeah, exactly.
No, it's just because, like, Nick Kennedy's mum's an author. We can also say Caden Murley's cousin's a stockbroker.
What do you do, Trev? Let us know so we can say that.
Perfect. Any other emails? Because I tell you what, the emergency pod has got such great feedback from so many people.
So many. Oh, this is so. I feel bad for not having gone through these.
It's kind of your job.
Sam Butler, subject title, all capital letters, 3! This boils my piss. Wondering about the comments regarding how young people consume content. The content they consume isn't going to change because the Prem or Championship isn't going to change. That's who they watch. It's not level 7 old Boyonians versus West Vesteros. The content will be the same. That's a bollocks argument. This is referring to you mentioning what David Flatman had said. Mm-hmm. So David Flatman's talking about or that maybe this needs to change because then it will change what they watch on TikTok.
No,
the top two divisions aren't going to change.
No, that's not what I said.
What did he say?
What I said is they are consuming basically two types of highlights, which are the Marcus Smith things and then the massive hits.
Yeah, but what's that got to do with the law change?
Well, if they're going to then go and play, say, under eight, you know, under 18s and under 19s, then if their intention is only to create massive shots, you might want to temper that temptation.
Hmm. My thought on this is that I don't know how much junior rugby any of these experts experts. This is the one thing I've come to on this, right? When we're just sitting here in the rugby dungeon chatting shit about rugby, we have opinions. We're not experts.
Well,
we're fans.
No, I am a world-class expert at amateur rugby.
Wait, that's exactly what I was going to say. So we will have to, at times, defer to, whether it's Flats, Jim Hamilton, Ugo, whoever, because they've played at the most elite level. They know things and understand the nuances of the game, and they can read it and are wired into it in a way that we might approach that level, but we can never be at that level. When it comes to amateur rugby, if you added up the games that we've played between us at various levels, level three down, the leagues affected, we all coach or referee or are still involved in our clubs or go regularly to amateur clubs. When it comes to this particular subject, we are the experts.
100%. 100%. Yeah, I don't disagree. So, you know, one of the problems I had, so one of the supporters of these regulation changes, one of the few supporters would be someone like Ugo Monia. Now, with the best will in the world, Ugo Monia has not picked up a ball, for what I can tell, is his entire life without a lot of money changing hands. Either him paying to go to a private school or him being paid by Harlequins in England. He's never played a game of amateur rugby. Yet he's willing to tell us exactly why it is that we should be subject to these changes.
Well, no, but he's... Anyone who is entitled to tell us that... But
are they?
And I'm not saying Ugo is doing this. No, yes, they are entitled.
What's going on?
They're entitled to say that. What they're not entitled to do is say that your opinion is less valid or even equally valid. Because
you don't know the context, allegedly.
What I'm actually saying is, on this particular thing, your opinion as someone who's still playing amateur rugby at level six and is coaching in it and has played how many games of...
Somewhere, I reckon between... Well... Do I play 30 games a season? No, probably not that many. So it depends. I reckon it's between 500 to 600 games I've played.
Right. Okay. That's not to say it should be any sort of casting vote, but it deserves massive. It deserves to be respected when you're talking on this particular topic. Is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Yeah. It's. You know, I've played every week for 20 years.
Please do continue to email contactedchasers@gmail.com. Please do continue to just do something because this is our game, it's our sport, and we get to decide what happens to it. And all I would say is, I'm sorry I haven't gone through more emails. What I would say as well, patreon.com/eggchasers, that's one where you can support us, keep the lights on, and where you can hear, which we will do very briefly.
Are we going to do it tonight? Because I am done with podcasting tonight. I'm done with it. I've been doing nothing but talking about rugby.
Well, when are you going to do it then? Because you've already said on the other podcast you're going to do it.
We will do it. We will do it. Well, let's finish off this one and have a chat about it.
Right, let the boys play.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.